And our special guest tonight, L.A. Marzulli, as we talk about his work, War Watchers 4. We're going to come back in a moment, talk about the Great Deception, what happens when you die, prophecy, and then the Mark of the Beast. Next hour, of course, we flip the switch, and we take your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. With L.A. Marzulli, L.A., before we move on, let's get back into your Great Deception and let you finish up that area there.
Well, yeah, what I believe is that you get a mile-wide craft appearing, let's say, at the end of some sort of cataclysmic war that we see forming in the Middle East, right? Maybe nukes are used, dirty nukes are used over here, whatever. The whole world is in a state of abject fear, collective fear, because we're all wired together. It's all internet and Twitter and Facebook. The world is, the planet is wired together like never before. So something happens in one place, we see it live, like the tsunami in Fukushima. We watch it happen live from a helicopter, you know, showing the tidal wave come in. We're sitting here watching it live on television. It's crazy.
That's right. I know. So, I was on the air when I was getting calls from Tokyo.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
So that in mind, bearing that in mind, my 1 mile-wide craft shows up. What are people going to believe? Many people will look at that and go, they're our progenitors. Finally, we know where we came from.
Some would say that.
Some would say that. Others will call it, like myself, well, we know, who are these entities, whatever they are? What do they really want? Where do they come from?
And some will say it's us.
Yeah, I suppose a few of them would say it was us from the future, perhaps coming back.
No, even military.
Okay, I see where you're going. Yeah. I call it the coming great deception, and they will bear gifts. I believe that they will bear gifts.
To trick us?
Yeah.
That's what deception's all about.
Well, yeah, this gets into the whole prophecy thing, too, the whole Mark of the Beast and all that, in my opinion. And it has to do with the work of Dr. Roger Lear, the alien implants which he's taken out. That's hardcore, physical, scientific, irrefutable evidence that something is going on. People are being chipped. They are implanted with these little – we looked at one last week. Under a scanning electron microscope at Seal Laboratory with Dr. Roger Lear and his metallurgist, Steve. And it was absolutely fascinating. I mean, this thing is so tiny. And we magnified this thing under a scanning electric microscope 40,000 times. And there we find these holes that shouldn't be there. They just should not be there in the metal, and yet they're there. They're perfectly round. They're about 1,500 atoms wide. I mean, that gives you an idea. 40,000 times we magnified this thing. What really blew us away is on the side of these little chips, for lack of a better word, it's like ganglia. It's like a little hair coming out. Remember, this is we're deep. 40,000 times we've magnified this thing. This little hair kind of sticks out. And what Steve and Dr. Lear believe, this is like a docking station for human nerve endings to connect to. Because these chips, Dr. Lear believes, as I do, that they're powered by the nervous system,
mm-hmm.
and also by the patient circulatory system. And when I've asked Dr. Lear, and he stands by this, we've got him on film saying it in Watchers, that this chip is changing the host's DNA. We don't know to what degree yet. And I look at this and I went, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, this makes the whole Mark of the Beast thing. And in my book, The Cosmic Chess Match, I mean, I spent, you know, 350 pages to get to the punchline that, oh, my gosh, this goes. See, we have a prophecy. I'm skipping around a little bit. We got this prophecy, 2,000 years old. Get this. It says it'll be like the days of Noah when the Son of Man returns. We've talked about this before. What differentiates the days of Noah is the presence of the Nephilim. Why would Yeshua warn us of this thing? And at all the other places of the Tanakh he can point to, he goes there. Why does he go there? What is he trying to show us? What is he trying to tell us? And it's like a flare going off.
Yeah.
My gosh, something's going on here.
Why would they return? What would their intent be?
The intent is exactly the same thing that happened in Genesis 6, is to create a race of Nephilim. And he's doing that
again.
With the chips. Again. He's going to do that. You take this mark, in my opinion, and I know you've had Doug Hamp on.
Yeah.
And we both, look, this is spooky. Hamp is working on his book. And I'm working on my book. There's no collusion between us. I have no idea what Doug's working on. He has no idea what I'm working on. I get him on my show, and just on a whim, I say, what do you think about the mark of the beast? And he launches into this discussion that's mirroring exactly what I just said. And I'm like falling out of my chair going, how did he know I was writing
this? The collective consciousness.
Unbelievable. Yeah. He came to the same conclusions that I came to. You take this mark, and this sounds a little harsh, but I truly believe this is where it's going. You take the mark, you will become Nephilim. This chip will change your DNA. It'll lengthen your lifespan, 500 years or longer, disease-free, and you will have kind of like, you know, we're like programming this stuff when we see it like the Avengers. All of a sudden, we have superhuman abilities because of the chip. What human being wouldn't want 500 years of disease-free, especially if they are...
What a great selling tool, huh?
Amazing. Absolutely. That's my theory. That's my take on it. Call me crazy. That's, you know, 25 years of research going into this thing, and it's based on ancient prophetic texts found in the Book of Revelation.
Even if you're half right, it's a very unbelievable story.
It's spooky, but we've got the chip. We've got that chip that's coming from someplace. It's doing something. It's changing the DNA.
And you believe that is the mark of the beast?
I do. I really do. And you know why?
And that's what it represents.
Well, there's four criteria of the mark of the beast that most people know one of them. You can't buy, sell, or trade without it. Okay, I get that one. But the second one is you take the mark of the beast, grievous sores appear on the body. Well, that sounds pretty weird. Then we get the third one, which is sort of cloaked. No one's ever talked about this. And that's, it says in those days, what days? The days of the mark. Men and women will seek death and not find it. What does that mean? Seek death and not find it? And there we go into the whole, you know, somehow self-replicating DNA that you, something happens, you get an injury, and your body repairs itself.
What are these implants doing now?
Well, Dr. Lear really doesn't know. I mean,
he doesn't know.
What?
He's baffled by it.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely. We all are. I mean, you know, we look at them. We're not sure what they're doing. He believes it's changing the host. I believe that they're prototypes. They've invested a huge amount of time and effort. I don't know who they is. The Grays invested a huge amount of time and effort into this program. Dr. Jacobs will tell you that. The breeding program, I mean, they have spent, you know, decades working this thing to get it to this point. And it's unbelievable. We had a woman that we, a little off subject, but it all ties together. Stuff's starting to manifest. This woman, and I'll keep her name anonymous right now, but
okay.
We interviewed her for Watchers 5, and she had an encounter. She knows nothing about the Nephilim. She knows nothing about ufology, nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. Mark of the beast stuff, hybrids, it's not in her worldview, not in her paradigm at all. So she's out jogging. True story. And this just happened this year. This happened in July. And we got her on film, and the react. What an interview, my gosh. She sort of vetted 25 years of research for me. So she's out on this jog, cut to the chase, literally. And she's running in this area of town where she's never really seen a lot of people. No kids, no children. And she notices up ahead of her that there's this child, maybe 11, 12 years old, kind of dressed oddly. His clothes are, you know, they're not rags, but they don't fit him right. And she kind of notices that, and, you know, well, whatever. So she keeps running, and she's about 2 to 3 feet away. And as runners will do, you know, you lift your head, and you nod and say good morning or something and keep running. When I run, I do the same thing. So she looks at the child, and she goes, good morning. The child looks at her, and that's when she's not in Kansas anymore. This boy had black eyes, no whites at all, total black eyes. Her words, not mine. It was like looking down two dark corridors to a pool of evil below.
That's scary.
And she ran as fast as she could away. I mean, she just tore out, was afraid to go back on the same route, finally had the courage to do so, didn't see him, was hyped up for hours afterwards. I said, what do you think this child was? What do you think you saw? Her words, not mine, no coaching. She has no, she said, the spawn of Satan, her words. And I fell out of my chair.
Well, are you saying that this is demonic?
I think these are the hybrids. And I've talked to David Weverly, whose book on the Black Eyed Kids, we're actually going to interview him next week. We're flying him in. And I can't wait to interview him. He's written a whole book on the Black Eyed Kids. This phenomenon is happening, so much so that we, you know, this woman contacted a friend who then contacted us. And coincidentally, she was in Los Angeles when we interviewed her. And what an interview it was. When I showed her the picture of David Weverly's book on the Black Eyed Kids, we had this on film, she recoiled from it. Take it away.
It was identical, wasn't it?
Absolutely genuine. So we believe, and I think I can say this for David too, because I've talked to him off the record and on the record, he believes that these are hybrids. They're not the final endgame, but that they're hybrids. And everyone who has an encounter with these hybrids, if I can use that word, is absolutely overwhelmed with a sense of evil.
They look human, but not quite.
But they're not quite.
And they don't seem to have any emotion.
They're evil.
Yeah.
Everyone says the same thing. And David's book, I mean, it's an incredible book. It's just an amazing book on the Black Eyed Kids.
Evil Black Eyed Kids.
Well, and anyone who sees this thing, and they're popping up more and more. And what I'm trying to get at is, if this is just not one, if it was one isolated case, we'd walk away.
Yeah.
But it's now coming more prevalent.
You'd think it was a mutant kid or something.
No, I don't.
No. I mean, if it was just one.
If it was one kid, yeah. Like the Chinese boy with the blue eyes.
Yeah.
What's that about? You know? And he can see in the dark like a cat.
Well, how compelling would it be, L.A., if all these stories that you and I have heard over the years, mm-hmm. alien abductions, visitations, incredible UFO sightings, all of it is true?
Well, I think it is.
I know. But if we finally prove it,
believer.
Prove it, and the world knows it, what does that tell you? We're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I call it the Great Deception. But if I'm right, and look, at some point, we're going to know who's right and who's wrong. Not that I, you know, well, you're wrong and I'm right. Not that. But at some point, all this is going to become self-evident.
This time period of 5 to 10,000 years,
mm-hmm.
they've done this cycle. Does that have anything to do with the timing of this? Are they on this cycle? You know, Sitchin said that Nibiru was on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit.
Right.
I wonder if that has anything to do with this. The timing.
We actually interviewed Marshall Masters, and we're flying Chris White out next week.
Good people. Good people.
Yeah, to talk about Nibiru and to try to get to the bottom of it. Something's going on. People are seeing something. The whole two sun phenomena. Yes, yeah, some of it's sun dogs. I understand that, but some of it's not sun dogs. I mean, we don't know what we're looking at. Does this jibe with biblical prophecy? Well, in some ways it does, because we're told that there'll be fearful signs in the heavens. Now, that's painting with a huge broad brush. I get that. But something like Nibiru comes, pole shift.
Floods.
Right? It's something like that certainly could happen. And that jibes with what we read in the book of Revelation. So we watch, we wait, we try to warn people. I'm not an alarmist, but look, we look at the world and the state of the world, the earthquakes, the famines, the floods, the fish and animal die-offs, birds dropping from the sky, Fukushima, the list goes on and on, the weird weather.
The weirdness of people right now. People aren't, you know, you just look at what's happening in the Middle East again.
Right.
People aren't acting normal. Something is changing them, LA. I don't know what it is, but
look,
something
at the zombie
is.
Apocalypse or the zombie, you know, the Miami zombie deal when all that happened. When that happened, I actually blogged about it, and I said, I think what we're looking at, and I went out on a limb, and I realized that. They found no drugs in the perpetrator, Eugene. They found no drugs, traces of marijuana, but nothing powerful like they thought.
Yeah, not enough, not like bath salts.
Yeah, something happened, and I believe when we go back and we study the Nephilim, what they were, we find that they were cannibals. They were voracious cannibals. They ate and drank the blood and flesh of human beings. And this is exactly what was happening with this Miami cannibal guy. He was acting in my, and this gets weird, and I understand that. Some of your listeners are going, whoa, that's really far out. But get this. if this guy was possessed, and, you know, with Art Bell talks about that whole deal with perfect possession and all that, with Father Malachi Martin, if that's true, if this man, Rodney Eugene, was perfectly possessed, that I believe the spirit that moved into him was a Nephilim spirit, a disembodied spirit of the Nephilim, and acted in the way that he acted thousands of years
ago. That's right, which is the only way he knows how to act.
That's it. He's in a fixed state. He can't do anything but what he does. He's in a fixed state. Now, that's a theory. I'm not saying that's what happened, but it's a theory that certainly fits the elements of the crime scene.
People are strange. I mean, I was watching a video today of a guy in Sweden. He was drunk, walking along the side of a subway system, and he's looking into the tracks, and he loses his balance and he falls. And a guy sees him fall and jumps in, and you think he helps him? No, he robs him, jumps up and leaves, and then the guy who got robbed gets run over by a train.
Wow.
Why is he alive, and how he got alive is beyond me. He was not dead. People were able to pull him out, but the train went right over him. Unbelievable. People just aren't acting normal, L.A. It's strange.
Well, I think it's, again, some of this we can look at prophecy, and prophecy tells us that lawlessness will be sort of the calling card of the day. And we see this thin veneer, this very thin civility that we have in this country and other countries can erode very quickly. Look at Katrina. Look at the violence and the looting and everything else from Katrina. Look at what happened in Libya just a couple of days ago in the Middle East. Look what's happening throughout the Muslim world. It's lawlessness is reigning, and it's happening in the city streets. There was a Richard Shaw, my friend and director producer of the Watcher series, but his son works at the Apple store. I forget which town it is, but the one recently where this thug drives a brand new BMW into the store and tries to, you know, loot the store. This is what we're into here. It's just lawless.
It's maddening, no doubt.
It's accelerating.
You mentioned David Jacobs, and yes. I've been watching his work for years.
Sure.
And, you know, he truly believes they're up to no good.
Well, I concur wholeheartedly. I've interviewed David for my book, The Alien Interviews, and it's a fascinating interview. I haven't spoken to him recently. I know he had went into some little bit of trouble a while back, and I think he came through all that.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, but I believe that he hits the nail right on the head, and I know in the back of his book he talks about that he's afraid for his grandchildren. They're up to no good. That's what I believe. You don't abduct people in the middle of the night at 2:30 in the morning and then keep them awake and have them floating through walls.
When they're not willing, either.
When they're not willing. They're unwilling participants. I think it's a nefarious agenda. Same thing with the cattle mutilations. It's all connected.
Does government know about it?
Absolutely.
In cahoots or can't stop it?
Both. Both. They've made a Faustian pact, as it were. They're so far down. Look, true story, and I've told this story before, and I'll tell it again. I interviewed a retired Air Force two-star general. His family didn't know what he did, and I'm not going to tell you what he did because that might tip it to who he was. But he was not black ops, but he had a top secret clearance someplace and did things that his own family had no idea what he was doing. And I was researching Nephilim, the second book in the trilogy.
Hold on for a second, LA. Sure. We're already at the break. We'll come back to that general story. Plus, we will talk about what happens when you die. We'll also get into prophecy in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with our guest, LA Marzulli, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls with LA Marzulli. You've heard what we've been talking about. More to come as we get into prophecy and near-death experiences on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Lynn Marzulli with us. Lynn, let's talk a little bit about prophecy before we get into the NDEs. What have you learned about your interview with Jonathan Daniels?
Well, Jonathan Daniels is a senior advisor to MK Danny Dannon, who's the speaker of the Knesset, Israel's parliament.
Okay.
And that's who he is. It was a fascinating interview for me in the sense that this is about as close to Netanyahu as I've ever gotten. And I was, I pulled no punches. I asked him questions like the question in everybody's mind, will Israel attack Iran? Now, this was several months ago. And he kind of looked at me and laughed, and he said, we have plans for Iran. Interestingly enough, I blogged about this, George. I blogged about this about a month ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I said, what if Israel attacks Iran and uses an electromagnetic pulse weapon, an EMP?
First.
Exactly. That story, my blog, was then, I saw the same, WND World Net Daily ran a similar story.
I did a story on it after that.
I'm not sure they're reading mine or it's just collective consciousness, whatever. But that same idea now is being, it's in the forefront. People are realizing that if the Israelis decide to hit Iran, this is what they might do. What's interesting, and from an Israeli perspective, right now they are totally surrounded, completely surrounded by hostiles. And that includes Jordan. Yeah, they got a peace treaty with Jordan, but that's King Abdullah. The basic citizenry of Jordan is not friendly.
Well, and we could see this collapse. You know, ironically, the friendliest country in terms of the people in general to the United States, for example, they're in Iran. The Iranian people love our way of life. Mm. They hate their leaders, and more so than anybody knows. But that to me is the most ironic part of all of this. If they could get Ahmadinejad out, believe me, they would.
And Ahmadinejad, you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, is a true believer in the Mahdi, the state. They didn't pay for this movie, but they sanctioned it. It was a state sanctioned movie about the coming of the Mahdi. The coming is upon us. You can Google that on YouTube and see it after the show if you want, or tomorrow, whatever.
Yeah, that's not the movie that's created the problems.
No.
Just so people know.
I saw about 30 seconds of that movie. It's like the
it
worst
was the worst. It was made
seen.
For, the guy said $5 million. I'd say $500.
Yeah, that's about it.
Maybe.
Everybody went and did it for free. And
it was unbelievable.
Anyway. But the coming is upon us is a state-sanctioned film which talks about the Arab Spring as being the sign that the Mahdi will come, because now the nations are in chaos. They believe that they will take Jerusalem. That's what they believe. They will drive the Jews into the sea. Israel will be no more, and they will take Jerusalem. Israel is surrounded by hostile nations. Look, there's no doubt about that. I get what amazes me is the rise of anti-Semitism on my blog. I've actually had to shut down the comment section.
No, you're right. It's growing. It's sad.
It's like 1938 again.
Yeah.
People don't get it. I get emails from people. The Holocaust was a myth. The numbers are greatly exaggerated. Richard, my good friend and you know, director producer, we put our heads together. We're working on this special documentary on anti-Semitism. We've already got several interviews in the can, and people that we've talked to. One rabbi in particular, yeah, it's just amazing. This guy lost, his mother lost 60 people in their family in the death camps in Germany. It's about as close
But it didn't happen, they say, right?
Well, they were all in Germany, and the war started, or the right before the war, 1938. And they knew they had to get somebody out. So they got the grandmother out at the time, this rabbi's grandmother. Mm-hmm. And she went to England, and she then tried to, you know, she had other people she was trying to get out, and the next person was this rabbi's mother, and that was it. The only couple of people that they were able to get out before the borders were sealed, and they lost upwards of 60 people. Basically, the family was wiped out in the death camps. That's just one story, and we want to make this short documentary. Because anti-Semitism is on the rise. It is 1938 in some respects. The same virulent anti-Semitic remarks.
Hateful.
It's unbelievable, the stuff that comes out of Iran. And you're right. It's not the Iranian people, per se.
No.
It's the mullahs. It's Khomeini and Ahmadinejad and others of that ilk.
Those who are stealing the Iranian people's oil money.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
There you go. Very complex issue. Very complex issue, but one that alarms me, because Iran is the second nation listed in the Ezekiel 38 prophecy. Ezekiel is a prophet that lived 2,600 years ago. 38 is the chapter, just an address. That's all it is. But it talks about instead of Iran, it's Persia. Iran was Persia for thousands of years, and only in modernity did they do a name change, like Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy, same thing, same geographic location. The second nation name in that Ezekiel prophecy is Persia.
I love it. You were going to tell us a story about a two-star general.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. I'm doing the research on Nephilim, and I'm out with the general, and I've talked to this guy once before, and he's a really nice guy, and I'm asking him questions specifically about security. I'm trying to get an authentic overview or a look at what someone would do if they went into a base. And I have, like, what about, you know, thumb scanning eyes or thumbprints or whatever. And he kind of walked me through this stuff. But I was lobbing him softball questions. We're in his backyard. He's in shorts. I'm kind of dressed in my interviewing clothes type of thing. And I'm taking notes. This is well before the days of iPads. I think it's like maybe 98, 99, somewhere in that sort. It's over a decade ago at any rate. And I'm interviewing him, and I've got him really relaxed. And his wife brings out some lemonade, and he's sipping it, and I'm sipping it. It's just a gorgeous day, and we're talking. I'm lobbing these softball questions, and I had my little question I was going to throw him to see what he would do, specifically looking at the man's body language as an interviewer, as someone that's conducted, like you, hundreds of interviews. But when you're looking at a person, that body language really comes into play. If the eyes dart, you know, how's his head moving? Is he ticking nervously? Is his hands twitching? Does he grab himself on his leg and kind of hold it? Does he wring his hands? Does he look away? Does he grimace? Does he, you know, frown? All these things I'm trained to look at. And I'm watching this guy like a hawk. So I lobbed the softball over after 20 minutes, and I asked him, I said, what was it like when you saw the retrieved bodies from the Roswell spacecraft? This guy's body language, George, went absolutely off the charts. Off the charts. He sits up. He crosses one leg. He looks around and glares at me. He kind of fiddles in the chair and props himself up, and, like, all of a sudden, bam, there's this steely-eyed general, not the relaxed guy I was talking to 30 seconds before. Steely-eyed, face of flint, and he says, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm saying, oh, I just thought I'd ask. I played innocent and moved on to my next question. Yeah. Inwardly, I'm desperately trying not to show any emotion. I'm going, oh, my God.
You already got your answer.
Yeah, I got my answer. I don't need a yes or no. Guy's body. Now, it's an interesting story. It makes for great radio, but it's like you have to be there, and I was there, and I saw something that makes me believe that he knows something.
Anyway, today, and that is a great story, there's been talk that we are now on the cusp of Armageddon.
Yeah, I would say so. I think we're really close.
You agree with that, then?
Mm-hmm. And I say that with a lot of sadness, I can't even think words for it. If we're really going to move into that, all hell's going to break loose. We're poised for it. When we look at the euro, the instability in Europe, we look at Greece and Spain and Portugal.
It's diversion time, isn't it?
We come over here and we look at the $16, $17 trillion in debt. This whole thing is like the perfect storm, in my opinion.
I have been talking for about 18 months now of this uncanny, strange feeling that I'm beginning to pick up from so many people.
Mm-hmm.
I started talking about this, and, you know, other than our coast-to-coast great listeners, a lot of people outside didn't even know what I was talking about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, now I'm getting people, L.A., approaching me saying, remember what you've been talking about this strange feeling?
Oh.
I feel it now. I don't know what it is, but I feel it. I'm beginning to think that when we talk about Armageddon or some kind of major conflict or another war, maybe that's what we're talking about. Maybe that's the feeling.
Well, I have been blogging about World War III for months. It's coming, unfortunately. We are looking at World War III. It'll be a short war. It's not going to be a four or five year war like we saw in World War II.
Will it be atomic?
Yeah, there'll be nukes, dirty nukes used, live nukes used, all sorts of weird stuff, EMPs.
Well, you talk World War III, you're talking Russia, China, everybody.
Well, yes. It's just a world war is like two or three. The definition, I think, is two or more continents, and that's we're already there. Europe might be drawn in the fray. Russia could be drawn into the fray. China, The Middle East certainly will.
What's the catalyst? What's the catalyst?
That no one knows, and that's what's interesting. There will be a flashpoint. Something is going to tip this thing. Everyone is foaming at the mouth. There's so much saber rattling going on.
Could it be Israel, Iran?
If Israel strikes Iran preemptively, that certainly the rest of the Muslim world isn't going to stand.
Which I predicted before October. I hope to God I'm wrong.
I hope you are too. Who wants to see this?
But that's a prediction. Predictions aren't based on, on hope. They're based on what you feel.
Yeah, a gut feeling.
Yep.
Nothing would surprise me. Our intel, what we're getting, is that the Israelis are primed. The populace is primed with gas masks for chemical warfare. They know Hezbollah in the north is armed with at least 40 to 50,000 rockets, and these are not the little Katyusha World War II things. These things have been retrofitted. They can hit Tel Aviv. Hamas now has Stinger missiles that came in from Libya. We know that. So now Israel, if Israel attacks Iran, they've got a three-front.
See, I think Israel believes it's now or never. And here's the fatal mistake, I think, again, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has made. Why does he have to incite things? Why does he have to say, I don't believe in the Holocaust. I think Israel needs to be blown off the face of the map. And, I'll get emails from some people says, no, he never said that. Yes, he has.
Yes, he has.
And I've had people who are experts on Arabic and Farsi, which is what they speak.
Right.
Yes, he has. Why is he inflaming this? And why are the mullahs inflaming this? Why can't they simply, keep quiet and say, look, we want peace with you too, and we want this for our nuclear power. And you know what? This rhetoric of your non-existence and we want you annihilated, it's over with. We're done talking about that. Why can't they do that?
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Wouldn't that just be
wonderful? George, I believe that there's a supernatural component to this. I write about this in the Cosmic Chess Match. Basically, it comes down to this. There are two different supernatural events. One, these people believe in the Prophet Muhammad, which is fine. That's what they believe in. But that supernatural event that centered around Muhammad's life is in direct conflict with Israel's supernatural events, talking about Moses and David and the Promised Land and all that. You've got two sets of supernatural events that happen. The offspring of these people believe in their particular supernatural event. They are at loggerheads with each other. There's a supernatural component to the Arab Spring. There's a supernatural component that we see in this vitriol against Israel. And unlike any other nation on the planet, I mean, it's off. It makes no logical sense. I wrote about this. Why the Egyptians could create better infrastructure, better schools, better hospitals, equal rights for women.
All those people we see protesting in Egypt, by the way, outside our U.S. embassy, I don't think any of them have jobs. They'd be at work. They're not working.
And that's the problem, isn't it? Instead of doing all the things and focusing on the things that would be better for the people, and I've got film of this. You've got this imam. His name is Agassi. And Agassi is screaming, to Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions. And there's 1.5 million, Egyptians in Tahrir Square yelling at the top of their lungs, to Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions. It's a supernatural component to this whole thing. It's being fanned behind the scenes in a supernatural way, I believe.
Can we change destiny? Can we alter this?
Well, we can. I mean, if everyone would just come together.
Or if it's predetermined. Genesis has it predetermined.
Yeah, it is. And the reason for that, the best illustration I've ever heard is from Chuck Smith. You're in a helicopter watching a parade, right? The guy down on the street sees the Mickey Mouse float go by. And after that, the Pinocchio float goes by. But if you're in a helicopter.
You see them all.
You see them all. And that's all we're looking at. We're stuck in the space-time continuum. Time is an illusion. We all know that. Einstein's theory proves it. Time is just an illusion. If you approach the speed of light, time begins to slow down. We've interviewed people that have had time-space displacement, shall we say, missing time, all that stuff. So time is an illusion. And someone is outside space and time and going, because they see the whole parade, because they're in that cosmic helicopter, they're going, hey, guess what? I don't want to tell you this, but this bad thing is going to happen real soon, and I think we're approaching
it. I believe that you can alter intuition. That's what intuition is. It helps you exist. It's happened to me. I've avoided car accidents by intuition, gut feeling, that special thing that's within you. But I don't think you can alter prophecy. I think once it's there, it's there. And like these Twilight Zone movies, though you may change something to alter prophecy, it'll happen somewhere else because of what you didn't do.
I'll give you one great example of that. People have tried to blow up the Dome of the Rock, and they've also tried to blow up the East Gate.
Yeah.
Those two buildings, edifices, are key to prophetic literature.
That's right.
And they're still there, and they will remain there. No one's going to blow up the Dome of the Rock, and no one's going to destroy the East Gate. It's not going to happen. Amazing.
It is. It is. Let's take a very brief moment, talk about near-death experiences. We'll take calls next hour with you, L.A. Tell me about your work with Howard Storm again.
Howard Storm is a man that we talked about this a little earlier in the show, but he had an NDE, near-death experience.
And this is Howard Storm, folks, not Stern, the talk show host.
that's great. And Howard was a diehard atheist, a Darwinist, didn't believe in anything. I mean, nothing. Just this is all there is. He was an art instructor. He's in Paris. And just an atheist. Anyway, the lining in his stomach ruptures, and the acid that's in the stomach begins to leak out. He lives in a hospital for 9 hours without any medical attention, not so much as an aspirin. It gets to the point where he can't hold on anymore, and he finally lets go. Well, he finds himself standing outside his body, and he's screaming in his wife's face. She can't hear him. He goes over to his roommate and screams in his face. He can't hear him, and these people are out in the hall. Come on, Howard, let's go. Now, he's in France. They're speaking English. How can that be? We've been waiting for you, Howard. Come on. So he goes out, and these people are there, and he begins to walk down what he thinks is a hospital corridor, and they keep walking and walking and walking and walking, and it gets dark and gloomy and darker as he goes, and pretty soon there's more people, and they begin to poke him and prod him and say mean, nasty things to him, and as he begins to struggle and fight back, they do this all the more. Finally, it gets to what he describes as making a modern sadomasochistic movie like a Winnie the Pooh film. The things they do to him are absolutely unspeakable. And when he talks about this on camera, he loses it. I mean, he can barely get the words out. He has to stop, and he tears up, and just, you can see it's very incredibly emotional. So he's experienced something. Again, as a researcher, as a witness, a trained guy, it's like, okay, he's not making this stuff up.
No.
You can see his body language. He went through something, and he believes he went through something. I wasn't there. So he's laying in this heap of blood and just a heap on this floor, and they're jeering at him. And a voice inside him says, pray to God. He doesn't know who God is. God doesn't exist to him. He doesn't even know what prayer is. And he's sitting there going, well, what do I say? It's like e pluribus unum. It's sort of like humorous in a way. No, that's not a prayer. He's trying to remember what prayer is. And finally he remembers this little phrase. Most of us have learned it in Sunday school. And he goes, Jesus loves me, this I know. And he starts to sing that. And they're all going, the people around them are screaming at him. There is no God. Stop it right now. We're going to make it worse for you. And he sings this, and all of a sudden, his words, this guy's an atheist. I'm just a reporter here. I'm just telling you the story. And so he sings this little song. All of a sudden, this beam of light just blasts into this dark cavern, this horrible place. And these creatures, these you know, race, for lack of a better word, that were around Howard, leave. And he says in his own words, Jesus shows up. I realize that sounds completely crazy, but that's what Howard tells us.
We're coming back, L.A., with phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.